You can now hear Film Actually on Stitcher Radio. Stitcher allows you to listen to your favorite shows directly on your iPhone, Android, BlackBerry, or WebOS device. The latest episode is always available for you. No syncing needed, no memory wasted. Don't have Stitcher? Download it for free today at Stitcher.com.
It'll be much less terrifying if you just come to me.
Wolfman's got nards!
Make love in the hammock!
What?
Hello, everybody, and welcome to Film Actually, episode 55. I am David McVeigh, and I am joined in the studio. Wait a minute. No. Where's Josh? Your plan has finally succeeded. I am joined by Richard Gray from The Real Bits. How are you, Richard?
Freaked out.
It is kind of weird. Yeah. We should probably explain just a little bit. Because of the move, we all know about the move and everything else. We're actually pre-recording this a few days early. Mm. And Josh is unfortunately unavailable to be here tonight. So it's just, this is not a real film, actually. It's numbered the correct way. But really, we just thought we need to keep stuff going on the feed.
And
we have a couple of films opening this weekend that we really thought we should talk about. So Richard's come along and it's the middle of the night.
Yep.
And it's just not quite right.
David's abducted me after a screening, basically.
So bear with us if we seem a bit undisciplined. We have no show. We have no show notes in front of us. We're free-falling here.
We're flying bareback.
So for those who don't know, this is the Film Actually Podcast, the official podcast. I can't even speak this time of night. The Film Actually Podcast, the official movie podcast of geekactually.com. And this week, we're going to review two films. We're not doing a list of five because it wouldn't be right to do one without Josh. So we're not going to do a list of five, but we'll kind of bluff our way around a few of the other things that we talk about. Really, we're here just to talk about two films in particular, one being 13 Assassins, which, Richard, you've seen a couple of times.
I have. I've seen it twice now, and I will definitely see it a third time.
Yeah, there you go. And we just literally got back from a screening of The Change-Up, the new comedy with Jason Bateman and Ryan Reynolds. So we thought that's fresh in our mind as well, so we'll talk about that one while we're at it. Both these films are opening Thursday, so by the time you hear this podcast, they'll already be in cinemas.
So you just rush out and
Just go then.
Well, depending on what we say, really. you've already seen them.
And I should remind people that you could normally watch Film Actually live, just not at the moment, because we're in the process of moving the studio, and it is a bit of a disaster around here, actually. Yeah. Normally you could at geekactually.com/live, and we will be live again. You're listening to this weekend, so you will be live again the following weekend. So
we will live again.
Episode 56, we should be live again, assuming all the internet connections go through as they have promised us. So we'll see how we go. All right, let's, before we roll into these movie reviews, before we go into the movie reviews, we have a correction to make. And I'm surprised, I guess I'm not surprised that the other episode's only been out for 2 days. We are recording this way early.
It's true.
But we made a big mistake last week.
Just a tiny mistake. Just a tiny mistake.
And I thought we should correct that right now. Last week, and it's funny because as soon as I heard the playback when I was getting the episode ready, I went, oh, we're wrong. As soon as I heard the playback, I went wrong.
You know, I think it's important that we can admit our weaknesses and our when we're wrong and move on and correct them and move on with our lives.
The thing that I found most amusing about this, and we'll tell you what we were wrong about in just a second. The thing I found most amusing was that I made the statement about this and you just dove and went, yeah, I think you're right. And we all had computers in front of us and none of us bothered to fact check this at all.
We were all looking at porn.
Yeah.
That's basically what
All right. So what we got wrong was last week we were actually talking about My Bloody Valentine and we said that the director went on to direct Piranha. And that is so wrong in every way. The director of My Bloody Valentine was Patrick Lussier, who actually went on to do Drive Angry. Mm-hmm. And really proved that My Bloody Valentine may have been a one-off. Because I've seen Drive Angry and it's not good. The director of Piranha was Alexander
Aja,
who is directing the second one. And he also directed The Hills Have Eyes
remake.
We do apologize for that. And we always admit to our mistakes if we make a mistake.
Most of them.
Well, I always admit to my mistakes because, well, I make a lot of them.
So. I'm usually infallible, except for last week.
Yeah. Okay. With that being said, what have you been watching this week?
You know,
the
last couple of days. Well, actually, since we recorded the last show, I went straight home and watched a movie called Valhalla Rising.
Which I really want to see.
Yeah, this is Nicholas Vindig Refn. I think I'm pronouncing that correctly. If I'm not, I haven't. And his new movie out is Drive with Ryan Gosling.
I'm dying to
and
see
I
Drive.
And I really want to see that. Everybody I know who's seen it so far at various press screenings is raving about this, so I have to see it, including our good friend Dave Longo over at Damn Good Cup. He said he saw it this morning and he loved it. I
watched the trailer several times. It looks fantastic. It just really can't wait to see it.
Well, yeah, no, it looks like it does what action movies should do.
It looks like it does what's on the box.
Absolutely. Yes. Look, I've seen heaps in last week because we're pressed for time. I'll only mention a couple of them.
Wait. Go back to Valhalla Rising for a minute. Oh, sorry, Valhalla Rising. What was it like?
It was really, it's not what I expected. Like the box paints it as being this brutal, bloody Viking movie set in Scotland, and it is. But there's also these really long, beautiful, almost surreal moments in it as well, which I didn't see coming. But it's a brutal, bloody Viking film.
But is he the greatest director of all time, like he likes to make himself sound?
No, but he does know how to shoot an action scene, which, as we've said on the show before, we've been lamenting modern directors not knowing how to do that.
Yes.
And he certainly corrects that. And this is a guy who did The Pusher years ago, and he's done another movie called Bronson, which I'm ashamed that I haven't seen.
Well, I'm actually ashamed to admit that I haven't seen the Pusher trilogy. Mm. So many people talk about the Pusher trilogy.
Look, I've seen the first one. They're difficult to watch.
Yeah.
You do have to be in the right frame of mind to see them. I've gone through a whole series of remakes and originals. I watched the original Footloose this week in anticipation of the remake coming out.
I really like the original Footloose.
You know what? It surprised me how good it actually was. It's actually quite a serious film.
Yeah.
And I expect to go back to see this 80s camp classic, as you know, I'm on my 80s kick at the moment. And it really wasn't. And it has some really, really good scenes.
What's so interesting is it came out the same year as Flashdance.
Yes.
And Footloose is so much better than Flashdance.
And it's such a... It's such a well-rounded set of characters too, which really surprised me.
With the exception of Lithgow's playing a cartoon character. I mean, his preacher
usually does.
Yeah, his preacher is a cartoon character.
But even he has a few changes at the end. Even he sort of comes around.
But there's so much charisma coming from Kevin Bacon and his friend. Now, the actor's name has gone out of my head, but the one he's teaching to dance.
It's Chris Penn.
Chris Penn, thank you, Chris Penn,
the late great Chris Penn.
Yeah, and they've got good chemistry together. They're charismatic, and it's just it's a lot of fun to watch. And Laurie Singer was not hard on the eye.
Oh no,
I quite like Footloose.
It'll be interesting to see what they do with the remake.
Yeah,
you know, I saw a whole bunch of other things this week. I saw the Nightmare on Elm Street remake for the first time, which less said the better.
Yeah, really? We reviewed that on the show. Go back and look at our review on the show. Josh and I were not happy.
I can see why. For all the reasons, like, we all love a good horror film, and this was not that.
Like we said on our review, it has a couple of moments where you sit there and go, okay, things are looking up. We have this great sequence coming up. And then it just dies. And the sequence falls flat and it goes nowhere.
And they do some shot-for-shot remakes of the original, like the bathtub scene.
The bathtub scene, yeah.
It just wasn't as hot because it's, you know, she's no...
Heather Langenkamp.
Absolutely not.
No.
But look,
you're surprised I pulled that name out like that.
Absolutely, yeah. And it was a name that I was tossing around earlier this week when I was talking to people about Heather Langenkamp. Well, she was back for the third one, Heather Langenkamp.
It's such an awkward name.
It is an awkward name, and she's done a lot of TV lately, I think.
Really?
Yeah.
I thought she kind of disappeared.
She disappeared, but it's been like one-off episodes of television.
Wow, okay.
Saw three documentaries this week, and I won't go into too much detail, but there's one I really want to highlight called Page One, Inside the New York Times.
I want to see this.
It's fabulous. They've basically sent a camera crew. They really spend most of their time with, in fact, almost all their time is with the media section of the New York Times, which is the section that looks at other newspapers and things. And so it does spend a lot of time with David Carr, who's a brilliant journalist, ex-junkie turned New York Times journalist. And he's got an amazing story on himself, so look him up. But it was one of those movies where I could have spent another 3 hours watching these people do their thing.
Yeah.
It was that fascinating. And they really could have done this as a TV series and spent time with every section of New York Times. But what it does, it's also lamenting the death of... old media with the rise of new media, but actually sort of making the point that new media couldn't exist without the old media as well, that it's a symbiotic relationship. And it's just a really fascinating discussion of of that, and how, like, you know, everyone at the Times uses new media, and these other sites that are claiming to be the latest thing are in some ways just aggregators of a whole lot of old media sources. Mm-hmm. And David Carr makes this great point of holding up the front page of an aggregated website, saying, beautiful looking website. Now here it is without the New York Times, and there's all these blank holes. Yeah. In it, which is, it's a great movie, so just see that if you can, if you have any interest.
Yeah,
in
and I actually really want to. There was a media screening of that that I was invited to, which I just couldn't get to.
Yeah,
I really want to see it.
And it was only a one-off. Like they did a one-off screening of it. There's only one media screening. That company normally does a couple. So, but it is coming out in cinemas here next week, I believe. And I saw two other docos, but I won't go into details with them. One was called Heavy Metal Picnic, which was set during the 1980s heavy metal scene. It was just based on somebody's old...
The drummers explode, that's what I...
Yeah, but, yeah, all of them, constantly. And last night I watched a documentary on William S. Burroughs, which interviews just about everybody who ever had a connection with him, from musicians to other writers to well-wishers and ex-lovers. It's really good.
Yeah, so I actually want to see that too.
It's called William S. Burroughs, The Man Within...
Cool. Well, my list isn't quite as exhaustive as yours, but I did manage to see Tamara Drew this week,
yes.
Which I kind of avoided at the cinema. I'm kind of ashamed I did, but...
it was hard to catch.
Well, it was. The Ritz had it on for a short period, and then it kind of vanished. And the only reason I really wanted to see it was because Gemma Arterton at the time was kind of hot because
she's still hot.
Not that kind of hot. Hot coming off of Clash of the Titans, yes. And off of Prince of Persia.
Prince of Persia, yeah.
And so I thought it'd be interesting to see her do something that isn't in the fantastical realm and just giving her a chance to actually act.
Yeah.
But I didn't get to see it, and I finally watched it on DVD this week. And I surprisingly liked it.
No, it is good.
Stephen Frears has a way of making films which take you in directions you're not expecting them to go in. And when you think you've got it pegged, like we talked about how predictable Chalet Girl was.
Yes, yeah.
And you kind of lean to each other and go, okay, and wait for it. There it is, you know? Yeah. Whereas with Tamara Drew, you sort of go, okay, wait for it, here it comes. And, oh, no, it didn't happen.
Yeah.
And it takes you somewhere else completely.
And those I remember those two kids.
The two girls, schoolgirls.
Who were like a great chorus in it.
Yeah, they keep breaking into her house.
Yeah.
I love this one line where he says, we have an infestation. And she goes, of what? She goes, of Jody.
It's a surprisingly disarmingly funny film at times, and if you want to see Gemma Arterton in something else that's not a big epic film, highly recommend the BBC production of Tess of the D'Urbervilles.
Yeah, and she's actually quite good.
Yeah,
you know, she is actually quite good, and she isn't just a pretty face, which she has been made in all these fantasy films. There is a little bit of depth to her.
Oh, absolutely.
And I quite liked it. I don't think it's a brilliant film.
No,
it's not one of Stephen Frears' finest. It's no Queen. But it is a quirky British drama, and
with a great cast.
With a great cast. And speaking of great casts, and another quirky British comedy drama that I watched a film called How About You. Now,
all right, yeah.
Okay, yes, I watched it because Hayley Atwell was in it, and I have a crush on Hayley Atwell. She played Peggy in Captain
America. I've not noticed.
Yeah, so that was the reason. Don't for
we'll
going
get to my
it.
Crush later in the show.
Yes, we will. But this film also stars, and I'm proud. One of the things I really want to know is whether could she hold her own in a film without Captain America and everything else going on? Was she just a pretty face? Once again, she actually does hold her own when you actually put her up against Joss Ackland, Brenda Fricker, Vanessa Redgrave, and Imelda Staunton. You sit there and go, okay, she's up against some powerful players here.
Yes.
And she's holding her own quite nicely amongst these people. And they all give amazing performance. And as my lovely wife Katie was watching it with me, and she just looked at this dinner party scene where the five of them are sitting around a table, and she just looked, and there's Hayley Atwell, who isn't svelte and thin. She's actually got a bit of meat on her, and she's a very natural, beautiful
That's
looking
why
girl.
I love her.
And then you've got these four distinguished old British actors, and you sit there and go, there isn't a touch of Botox or plastic surgery or anything at that table. You know, these are five very real looking people, you know, and it was actually a really charming film. Not great. I don't think the resolution is quite there. It felt like it was missing a scene.
Right,
it kind of feels like you get to a certain point and time to roll the credits. And you're going to go, I just wanted one more scene, you know? But aside from that, I quite enjoyed my time with it. And I quite enjoyed it's enjoying your time visiting these actors and visiting these characters playing, you know? And so I quite enjoyed it. So yeah, it is on DVD and you can grab it now.
Okay, well, I might have to check it out.
So have a look for it. I have watched other things, but I think we should get onto our review. I think so. We'll do a much bigger what we've been watching section in the next show when we're back live again, which will be nice. Now, we'll start with 13 Assassins. Do you want to give us the rundown on 13 Assassins? Because you've written it so nicely.
I've written a little quick summary on my website, which is, I'll do it in big announcer voice.
Sure, why not?
In 1830s Japan, the wicked Lord Matsudaira Naritsugu. Sorry, I
thought you were going to get through
this. I really did. Sorry. In 1830, which is played by Goro Inagaki, terrorizes the people using his status as the former shogun's son and the current shogun's brother as immunity. When Master Samurai Shinzemon Shimada Koji Yakushu is summoned to assassinate Lord Narugutsu, he gathers together a group of elite samurai to undertake the task.
See, and that's so much nicer because if I had done it, I would have just read the IMDb
Which is like two lines, I think.
In fact, I've got it here if you want to hear it. The IMDb one, to summarize, says, a group of assassins come together for a suicide mission to kill an evil lord.
How many assassins is that, David?
That would be 13. Now, we jest, but this film is staggering.
Oh, it's... Look, I've been singing its praises. We said that I'd seen it twice, and I'd easily say it at the time, because it's an absolute masterpiece.
Yeah, no, look, it's fantastic. It is in the same sort of vein as your classic samurai TV series or Lone Wolf and Cub or what have you, but with a lot more style. I mean, this is a really well-put-together film, but it's got that same sort of... that nonchalant violence level where
that Takashi Miike is known for.
That's right, absolutely.
And it's this is the guy who did things like Ichi and Audition, Ichi the Killer and Audition, and but he also makes sort of random movies like Yataman, which was based on a 1970s Japanese anime. So it's he's had this very kitsch retro yet very tongue-in-cheek kind of very over the top sexual references kind of movies.
Yeah.
He's been unfairly labelled the Tarantino of the East, which I think insults them both.
No, do you know
he's more the Robert Rodriguez.
Well, no, I was about to say, I actually really do believe, because I'm a huge Akira Kurosawa fan.
Yes.
And I think if Akira Kurosawa was a young man today, this is what he would be making.
He'd totally make this film, and I think this is Takeshi Miike makes a lot of films, and in fact, I think... in 2001 and 2002 alone, he made 15 films.
Jesus Christ.
This is a man who churns them out. So that's why I say the Robert Rodriguez of...
Well, I think you're better off with Robert Rodriguez. It's not Tarantino. Tarantino doesn't make that many films. Rodriguez just pumps them out. So you're right, absolutely.
And you know, he really has... But the thing is, he's made a lot of films, he's made a lot of violent films, but he's been sort of jumping from genre to genre. I think he's finally found his niche, because his film immediately following this one is called Harakiri, Death of a Samurai, but it's a much slower moving movie. It doesn't have the big violent kind of... scenes that this one does, which I'm sure we'll talk about in a second. And then he's also made a movie called Ninja Kids, which is more his kiddie fare, but he stayed with that whole kind of ninja master apprentice kind of theme. So I think he's found his niche, and thank God, because this is... Look, I'm just trying to talk about it again now, and I'm still staggered by this.
Yeah, and look, we haven't played a trailer for this film on this show because, quite frankly, the trailers are all in Japanese. So on an audio show, it's not going to do any benefit. But you can find the trailer online. I think iTunes may even have
it. iTunes has got it, yeah. Yeah, so it's very readily available.
If they don't, it'll be Yahoo Movies or somebody will go to YouTube. Somebody will have this trailer out there and have a look at it. And you'll get the immediate flavor from the trailer.
Oh, absolutely.
It is subtitled. It is in Japanese, but do not let that turn you away. What's really interesting about this film is its structure, because this film has about 45 minutes to 50 minutes of setup. And there's all this talking and setting it up and showing what a bad guy this guy is, and the assassins forming and building the group and deciding what to do and finally finding that moral ground where they say, yes, we'll take this on. And then... It literally goes into probably what is about a 45-minute action scene.
It is. It's a 45-minute action sequence.
And it just goes... Once it starts, that's it. That's the rest of the film, is this 45-minute act, which is staggering to watch.
Yeah.
You know, it's just amazing. And it pays off everything that has come before.
It's literally the gates close and all hell breaks loose. And it's like... Seriously, if you want to see how an action film and a battle... I mean, look, we've been through a lot of battle sequences in the last... we've been through a lot of war. the last few years, and a lot of period setting war, and like, you know, frankly, I'd become a little numb to it.
Well, you become desensitized to it,
and
one of the
even
other
by the third Lord of the Rings film, I was kind of like, I feel as though I've been through this battle.
Yes, yes. You know, saying, what's really interesting about this is that it's also it doesn't feel over CG'd or anything like that. So there's a lot of real people, and there's a lot of practical
effects.
There
is some CG in
there. There is CG going on, but it's not like, let's put 10,000 people on screen. Enemies are there. The army is there. The 13 assassins are there. We're actually seeing close combat fighting. It never feels overwhelmed by all the CG going
and
on.
And for a director who's known for his excesses, and including his CG excesses, in something like Yataman, he really goes over the top with the CG, but it lent itself to it. This is an uncharacteristically restrained film from him, but I think it's just the right level of excess. I'm not going to mince word. It is a bloody, violent, over-the-top.
But strangely, after hearing about this film, it wasn't as bloody as I thought it was going to be. So
there is at least one torrent of blood.
Yes. But I mean, for those who have seen things like Lone Wolf and Cub, it's nowhere near that kind of league where somebody's head will come off and we'll literally have a fountain go through the air. It's not. It is a little bit more realistic than that.
Oh, absolutely.
But there is a lot of blood.
There's a lot of blood, but it's almost justified, and it is justified. And I look.
And aside from the early scene, and this is a vague spoiler, but aside from a very early scene in the film which shows the tortured girl,
yes,
none of it's actually particularly disturbing. It's just violent. It's not.
And when it is disturbing, it's to really hammer home a point, which is how bad the guy they're going after is.
Yeah.
And he has his few little trademarks on there, which is those things where he goes a little over the top, but that's his trademark. Otherwise, this is. I think, as I said, he's found a genre which he's incredibly good at making. I've got nothing but good things to say about this film.
Yeah.
If I say any more, I'll just gush.
Yeah, no, look, like the blood.
Exactly.
I highly recommend it as well. If you are looking for something different to go see this weekend and you don't feel like just going to see all the commercial fare that's out there, this is something to go see. And look, if quite frankly, if you're going to go see Conan, this is a better film.
Oh, absolutely.
You know,
but
what I'm saying is, if you're going for something that's got lots of swordplay and violence and so forth, go see this, because this is a much more satisfying film.
Yeah, and look, I really think this is great to see this released. I've really got to give props to Icon, who are distributing this here in Australia, because frankly, we don't get enough Japanese cinema, or any Asian cinema for that matter, released in this country. And when it is, it's either on DVD or it's really hard to track down, and a few cinemas out in the middle of nowhere, you got to go and see it.
There was a real surge at one point of Hong Kong films coming out. But yeah, the Japanese cinema, there's so much good Japanese cinema out there.
It is released, and it's a burgeoning cinema, and it's, you really don't get to see it. And beyond the Japanese film festivals and the other major film festivals. So look,
and the only stuff that seems to come out on DVD is the
Kurosawa things.
Like, it's like he's the only filmmaker that's ever existed.
Or you get like Robo-Geisha Vampire Girl versus Frankenstein Girl.
Yeah.
You know, really, really kitsch over the top stuff. So it's great to see something that's this quality from a major director being released by a major distributor in Australia. And you know, if for no other reason, encourage them to release more of them.
Yeah, absolutely. So everybody should go see this. It's well worth it. On the flip side, on the complete polar flip side of this film, we saw The Change-Up. Now, for this one, we will read the IMDb one, which is simple and to the point. It says a comedy in which a married father accidentally switches bodies with his best friend, leading to a series of wildly complex difficulties. And the film, of course, is The Change-Up.
And hilarity ensues.
Directed by Dave Dobkin. Now, Dave Dobkin actually directed a very funny film a few years ago called The Wedding Crashers, which I absolutely loved. And I remember seeing that at the cinema thinking, and there was kind of, that year was also the year that gave us The 40-Year-Old Virgin, and it was a really good year for comedy. He went on to do, the next year or 2 years later, Fred Claus, which wasn't quite as successful.
It's still fun.
Fun, but not as successful. This year, he's brought us The Change-Up. And it's kind of a real return to form for The Wedding Crashers. It's going back to that whole adult humor.
Yeah.
We're treading heavily into Judd Apatow territory.
Absolutely.
Even including Apatow's wife.
Yes, Leslie Mann, who seems to be making a career out of playing that character.
Yeah, pretty much. She's playing the same character that she played in Knocked Up.
Knocked Up,
yeah,
pretty much.
Pretty much. Maybe not quite as harsh.
No, and a lot more nude.
Yeah, was it prosthetics or was it her?
I don't know if it was her. I'm impressed.
Yeah, me too. Yeah, there's a few questions about that, but we'll come back to it. So this film stars Ryan Reynolds and Jason Bateman as the two body switchers. Supporting cast is Leslie Mann and Olivia Wilde. For regular listeners of the show, you'll know that Richard has a massive crush on Olivia Wilde. And this film, there were a few glances exchanged.
Oh, yes.
Let me tell you, because she is gorgeous in this film.
She's gorgeous in any film, David.
And questions about whether or not it was a body double or not still raise their head. But
I don't care. It's been filed away for future reference.
Now, I actually went to this film expecting to hate it. Look, before we talk about it, let's actually play the trailer.
It's your turn.
Awake. No.
So what am I tonight? A burglar?
Oh, hello.
Tell me about your women, please.
I have been keeping company with a number of nice ladies. This right here is Brenda. Ooh. She wants it in missionary, wheelbarrow, Arabian goggles, the pastrami sandwich. But let me tell you, no man is that hungry.
Oh, I don't even know what these are.
You're married.
Good point.
What is her name?
That is Tatiana.
Wow. And what's her last name?
Tatiana. Calls me at 3 in the morning and wants to fuck Steen. Who gives a shit?
Right. Yeah, got it.
You're living the dream, Mitch. Having children, it's living with little mini heroin addicts. You know, they're laughing one minute, and then they're crying the next, and then they're trying to kill themselves in your bathroom for no good reason. They're very mean and selfish, and they burn through your money, and they break shit.
Guy, come on.
You know, I was just saying that I envy your life, Mitch.
I envy yours.
I wish I had your life.
Mitch? Why am I in your apartment?
Open the goddamn door!
I knew it.
You wished for my life while we were pissing in that fountain.
We wished we had each other's lives.
I'm a douchebag.
Fucking tool.
For the first time in your life, you're good looking. You're single. What's going on between us? It's crazy. But what's even more crazy is not to use it.
I adjusted the WACC to reflect the new monthly projections. I'll have my briefs on your desk by lunch.
That puts my balls on your chin by dinner.
That is Schedule 4 sexual harassment.
Hold on, you two guys should go out.
Because you're so single, Mitch.
Wait, what? How do you like working with Dave?
I actually used to have kind of a crush on Dave.
Oh, no, you didn't.
No, but he's married, so obviously.
Right, obviously. Obviously. Yeah. Obviously.
Yeah.
Super married.
What do I tell Jamie when she wants to have sex tonight?
You're not having sex with my wife, Mitch.
Oh, my God, it's going down. Hope she likes it weird.
I am gonna ruin her. Oh, my God.
I need to cool it on the Thai food.
Oh, my God.
Question, how long have you been shaved down there? I get an extra inch, and only married dudes rock the dick froze anymore.
I've got freckles on my taint. How awesome is that?
Okay, so that was the trailer for The Change Up. And going by that trailer, I thought I was going to hate this film.
Yeah, look, it's funny. I sort of waned and waxed on this because it was sort of an attempt to go for that R-rated thing. But then I thought, oh, it could just be another silly.
Well, and the trailer looks like it's trying too hard.
Trying too hard, exactly. Yeah. And this is the problem that we've had lately. It's I really wanted to see a return to that 80s style comedy. And so when I saw something like a body swap comedy, fantastic. Because there were so many great body swap comedies from the 80s.
Oh, like Father Like Son. And what was the one with George Burns? I can never remember.
There was one called Vice Versa, I remember.
Vice Versa with Judge Reinhold.
Is that the one that had Fred Savage in it?
That had Fred Savage and Judge Reinhold. And the like Father Like Son was Dudley Moore and... Oh, we've got computers in front of us. Look these things up. What was the kid's name in that one? It was he had curly hair. Anyway.
Justin Timberlake?
No, not that one. And there was another one. And, of course, we also had Big, which wasn't Body Swap, but it was about a kid who got big. And that was another one that was very popular in its day. That was probably the best of them all. There it is.
It's Kirk Cameron.
Ah, Kirk Cameron. I told you, curly hair. and there was one more, which I can't think of off the top of my head. And of course,
there were stacks of them.
Yeah, there's lots. Oh, there's Dream a Little Dream with the Corys.
We're going back to the 70s with Freaky Friday and all those.
Yeah, absolutely. And then we also had the Parent Trap, which wasn't actually body swapping, but we had twins, and we liked to play with the twins. So there's a lot of the 2 decades worth of films where we like to push people into opposite directions.
Look, and it's great. I mean, yeah. That whole Prince and the Pauper thing as well. But it's you know, so I was hesitant, and I actually tweeted just before I went to see this movie, for my sins, I'm off to see The Change-Up, but I'm strangely looking forward to this, actually, because I kind of actually got into the mood for it just before I went to see it, and because I thought there was something that appealed to me about it, other than Olivia Wilde. And
I quite like Jason Bateman.
I like Jason Bateman. Lovely man.
I meant his screen persona.
Did I mention that I met Jason Bateman?
Yeah, you did. Did I mention I took photos of Jason Bateman?
You did. They were nice photos, actually.
You can find all that coverage on either The Real Bits or Geek, actually.
Absolutely. That was for another movie of his, Horrible Bosses.
Which surprisingly I also liked a lot more than I thought I was going to like.
But I think this is what's happening. And you mentioned this all kicked off with the 40-year-old virgin. And I think since then we've been seeing this real return to that hard R-rated comedy, which we haven't seen really since the 80s.
And really politically incorrect, which I love.
And there's some really, there's a moment at the start of this movie, which you mentioned on the way home, when Jason Bateman's changing his child's nappy. Surprised me.
The second one surprised me.
Look, there's a lot of politically incorrect moments in this, but it's really going back to, and I think the 40-year-old virgin really brought back this thing with this casual nudity, and this is something you and I have discussed before, David, where it's like you don't see that in movies anymore.
No,
like, you know, every sex scene someone keeps their bra on. You know, it's like, no, couples, particularly ones who've been married for a number of years, wander around in various stages
that
of
scene was actually incredibly natural.
Yeah,
where she came, she just walked into the room, she was just naked, you know, picked up her nightie as she was walking through,
and as you see in the trailer, she actually goes straight into the bathroom, and I found that really great. And I was thinking about those sort of movies from the 80s, things like Stripes and any of those big kind of comedies.
Any
big comedy from the 80s. But I remember I was on the Stripes.
Or late 70s even with Animal House and stuff
things. But I think the reason Stripes comes to mind was because there's a scene where Bill Murray and his soon-to-be ex-girlfriend are just wandering, and she's just wandering around nude, basically, in the apartment. And on the commentary track, Harold Ramis actually says, on the DVD, on the commentary, Harold Ramis says, you don't see that anymore. You don't see casual nudity like that in movies. Mm. When did we lose that? When did we get so puritanical?
Yeah, that's true.
To lose that. And it is. It's kind of like now, every nude scene has to be with the bra on. Or we're almost back to a point where, you know, everybody has to have one foot on the floor when they're in bed together.
We actually seem to be terrified of a woman's nipple.
Yeah.
We don't mind seeing her butt. We don't mind seeing her in bra and panties. We are terrified of the nipple.
I dream of them. They're scary.
Love the nipple. It's like, bring it on.
We love the nipple.
We're big supporters of the nipple.
And I think Jack Nicholson once actually said, you know, in America, you can...
was that your Jack Nicholson?
No. You can cut off a woman's...
Parade of the ball busters.
All work and no play makes Jack a dull boy. If you suck on a woman's nipple, you get a hard R rating. If you cut it off, you get a PG-13. And that's true. There seems to be this thing, despite whenever, you know, someone gets shot, they blame the violent movies.
It's a very strange
moral compass where violence is not considered as hardcore as sex. And the thing I like about The Change-Up, there's a lot of nudge-nudge, wink-wink going on in this film, particularly around Ryan Reynolds' character, playing the douche, as always.
But let's face it, there was no difference between his character here or Hal Jordan.
No, absolutely.
Yeah.
No. I did actually think, though, it was quite good the way that... they picked up on each other's mannerisms.
Yeah, well, you'd hope they would in this kind of film.
But I think they actually did it particularly well.
But I think Jason Bateman was more successful.
Yeah, he was.
His playing douche was so much more effective than Ryan Reynolds trying to be straight man.
Yeah, absolutely.
You know, so...
Because I think it's good because Jason Bateman has been very typecast since Arrested Development.
Mm.
With the exception of maybe his role in Dodgeball, which which was fantastic.
I actually forgot about him in Dodgeball. He's fantastic in that.
He's very much played that uptight, straight guy who's very frustrated by everybody around him, which he does play again in this movie. Yeah. But it was good to see him.
But then he gets the body switch and he gets to play the douche, which
is really good to see him. And I think it's a movie they clearly had a lot of fun doing. Would have been nice. They're probably saving them for the DVD, but I'm sure there's a stack of outtakes.
I'll make you a bet that there is an unrated version of this film.
Oh, absolutely.
Around the corner.
Yeah, and we won't have to wait too long because I think this has been out for a while in the States already. Yeah. So we'll probably see that not too long.
No,
from
not
now.
Too far from now.
It hasn't been getting great reviews.
Well, look, to be fair to the other reviewers out there, it's not a great film.
No, it's not, but it's fun.
If you go there with the right intent, which is you just go there because you want to have a bit of fun, it's a bit of gross-out fun in places. Yeah. It's kind of silly. It's kind of sentimental in places. It kind of skirts a very fine line on its sentimentality.
And it doesn't do it as well as Judd Apatow.
It doesn't. Judd Apatow is a stronger filmmaker. Mm. It actually doesn't do it as well as Wedding Crashers. Wedding Crashers actually handles that transition a lot better as well. So it doesn't quite get there, but it is an entertaining ride. Mm-hmm. And there are enough laugh out loud moments. I actually found myself laughing out often.
I agree.
And I mean, there are some great sight gags in particular, especially with the babies.
Yeah.
The scene in the kitchen, you know, the scene I'm talking about is a killer. You know, I mean, that's just fantastic. And things like, you know, the way that he holds the babies. It's just got some great sight gags in it. You know, some really, really funny stuff in it. And so it is an entertaining film.
And these are two great comics who have proven themselves to be best when they're improvising, and I think there's a script that gave them a lot of room to do that.
Yeah, and I mean, Dave Dobkins comes from that same school of basically letting the actors fly, which is what he did with Wedding Crashers, and it's what Judd Apatow does with his actors, where they have a framework, they have a script, and then they basically just say, you do something with it.
Yeah, and I think it comes across. It's not as strong as some of those other ones, but, you know, and a strong female cast as well, which is pleasing to see.
Leslie Mann does a really good job. She's not quite the ball breaker that she is in Knocked Up, but she has some very, very soft moments where she's genuinely hurt by what's going on around her.
Absolutely. And I think, look, you know, as much as it pains me to say this, I think Olivia Wilde's character was a little underdrawn.
Well, she's eye candy.
She's eye candy, and she was the eye candy. But for the kind of object of affection, which is kind of like the ultimate prize in these movies, and there always is one, she's actually a little bit more well drawn than most of them.
Yeah, and look, she's got some good moments. The scene at the dinner. Is actually quite a fun
moment. It's a really nice sequence. It's Ryan Reynolds and Olivia Wilde go out for dinner together. Ryan Reynolds obviously still being
Jason Bateman
who secretly harbors a crush on Olivia Wilde's character. It's a really nice sequence because it is you do get a genuine chemistry there, I think. And it is rare to find that in this sort of comedy. Yeah. So there are those moments in there, but for the most part, it is just attempting to shock and attempting to...
My old co-host, Jacob, from episodes 1 through, I don't know, 38, 40, whatever it was, would have said, his perfect description for this film would have said, it's fluff. It's fun fluff, but it's fluff. You know, and that's really what it comes down to. It's fluff. It's like fairy floss. It's really sweet to eat. But there's nothing left afterwards.
No,
you know?
Except a stick.
Like a stick, exactly. And you got to look at the stick and go, what was on that?
But I've got this stick now.
So, I mean, and that's really what it comes down to with it. It really is just, it is, you know what it is? It's Chinese food. You'll enjoy it while you're eating it, but half an hour later, you're going to be hungry.
Absolutely.
You know?
Hey, that reminds me of a joke, David.
I don't know if we should do that joke.
What's brown and sticky?
Uh-oh, what?
A stick.
On
that's
that
right,
note,
people. I went there.
That's right. It is in the middle of the night. I should forgive him.
Where am I? Can I go home now?
Yeah, what are we doing here? All right. This is actually just a short episode. We did say that at the beginning. We're not doing a list of five. We're not doing news. It is just about the review of these couple of films. We just want to make sure that we have something on the feed for you every week while we're doing this big move. Because
I admire your dedication, okay?
Oh, just got to do it. My wife thinks I am insane. To try and keep
your wife is right.
To try and keep running things while we're doing the move. I told her, I said, so we're going to go to this screening on Wednesday night in the middle of moving house. And then Richard's going to come over afterwards in the middle of the night and we're going to record a show. She's like, really? It's like,
no, the lovely Susan said something similar.
Yeah, it's like, what the hell are you thinking? Anyway, so and then we got to get up tomorrow morning and start moving all over
again.
But look, it's all going to be worth it because I've shown Richard now some video of the new studio.
It's a nice looking place.
It's a nice looking place and it should do very nicely for our studio. It's going to be a little bit tighter than this one. It's literally probably about a third.
So we're going to be even closer than before, too.
Yeah. We measured that this table, so we sit three across on this table. This table fits in that room.
Excellent.
So we will still sit three across and we'll be fine.
So I won't have to sit on Josh's lap.
No, you won't have to sit on Josh's lap. There's not going to be any room for anything else in the room.
Right.
So it'll literally be these two tables, the microphones, and the computers, and that's probably it.
So we'll all fit on camera.
And we'll be like out of the room. So I don't know. But look, it's gonna work. It'll be fun. It'll be our new home and we'll make it work. It's as simple as that. So
because you love us.
Absolutely.
Mm.
I do.
Or you're talking to them? The audience.
I don't love them.
No, they love us though.
Oh, do they?
That's what I was saying.
Do they? Really?
Well, if they're listening, presumably they're interested.
Do you guys really love us? Send us your email.
They're 55 episodes.
Feedback at...
Go on, send it to us.
Feedback at filmaxi.com.
Do it.
No, in all honesty, we only do this because we love you guys and, you know...
And we kind of enjoy it.
We do. Yeah. We do. We enjoy coming here every week and making fools of ourselves and making mistakes, like saying that Lucio directed 3D.
Like it was an easy mistake. We've all done it. I did it last week.
Do you want to know the biggest mistake I've ever made?
Go on.
Biggest mistake I've ever made. It's Radio 3AW. So we're not even talking about podcasts. We're talking about radio.
Real radio.
Yeah. I got on there and I was doing, I was talking about films. And this was the 80s. Then the Charles Bronson film, Assassin, had just come out.
Mm.
And Assassination.
Assassination.
And it starred him and Jill Ireland. And I actually said on air, and, you know, I don't think that Charles Bronson has really been, you know, fully together since his wife died. And the woman who hosted the show went, did Jill Ireland die? I said, yeah, she died. Isn't it really sad? You know, he's never. And then I had to go on the next week and say, actually, she's still alive. I'm really sorry. I had heard somewhere that she had died. And then, of course, she died.
You were thinking of Death Wish.
And the funny thing is, she died like 2 weeks later.
Wow.
So it's like, oh, man.
What did you know?
Oh, it's like, oh, man. Could I have put my foot in it anymore? You know?
You were questioned, of course.
No, she was in a different country. It's all right. But I felt so bad. It was like that. And, you know, at times like that, you just got to kind of eat humble pie and say, I made a mistake. You know? But, you know. Anyway, so, you know, that's...
Alice this week is top 5 mistakes we've made in public.
Yeah, yeah. I've made a few. So that's absolutely. Probably on air.
That's pretty bad.
That's my biggest blunder. In print, I actually wrote somewhere that William S. Burroughs had died. Mm. And now, in my defense, now I got to say...
He's been old for a long time.
No, we'll do this. Because he's dead now, right?
He is dead
now.
Yeah,
good.
Yeah.
Okay, good.
I saw the body.
I actually wrote this piece. This is before the internet. This is a long time ago. And I had...
Before the internet?
Well, before the internet was big. So there weren't a lot of blogs. I'm old, remember?
No, anyway. I remember a time before the internet. I'm the other person who does.
Now, the funny thing is about it is I wrote this piece and I had read this thing about the passing of William Burroughs. It was a really major event. And then literally after I had written that, I stood by it because nobody contradicted me. Nobody questioned it. It was like William S. Burroughs. And then literally about 3 months later, no, probably 6 months later, Time magazine came out all about the Beat Poets. Mm. And there was this fucking photograph of William S. Burroughs in a wheelchair with a blanket. And he was still fucking alive, you know? And it's like...
He hung in there.
It's like, I heard you died.
For one of the few people who's actually done the actual military-grade LSD, he hung in there for...
He hung in there an awful long time.
We're not talking about the stuff that hit the streets. We're talking about the stuff that the army came up with.
Yeah, and then he played William Tell with his wife.
And it didn't turn out too well.
That didn't go so well.
No.
Look, William S. Burroughs...
he played William Tell with a 45.
Yeah.
A hand cannon.
Great writer.
Mm.
I take that back. Intriguing writer.
Mm.
Naked Lunch is one of those infuriating books where I go, the prose is beautiful, but the content is frustratingly insane.
I should say this documentary that I saw was narrated by Peter Weller.
Very good.
Who
played... Basically, the analog for William Burroughs in The Naked Lunch. Yeah. And the film is another one of those films which is incredibly frustrating because Cronenberg did an amazing job with that film, but it makes no sense.
No.
You know, and it really is an adaptation of the book in that sense, because you sit there and go, what the hell are you trying to say?
It's a great film, but you're right. It's batshit crazy.
No, it's absolutely. I saw it at the cinema and I remember sitting there going, I admire everything you're doing, but I have no idea what's going on.
Mm.
You know, he really lost me on this, you know.
What was it in The Simpsons? I think all the kids going to see Naked Lunch and they walk out of it and go, there's at least two things wrong with that title.
I love that. All right, well, we should finish up for the night because it is really extraordinarily late. So we're not going to do, as I say, a list of five or anything like that. We will do a couple of quick plugs really quickly. I'm going to do this off the top of my head because I don't have show notes. But we should throw out some plugs for, of course, Josh, because he's not here. RawDLC.com, you can find his other podcast that he does, which is DLC Live. And now,
hiphoponline.com,
which is his hip hop site. So there you go, Josh. You're plugged. Richard, where can people find you?
They can find me on The Real Bits. That's RELBits.com or on Twitter at DVDBits.
Fantastic. And of course, you can find everything to do with me just by going to geekactually.com. And you'll find my Twitter accounts, my Facebook fan page, you know, everything. Just go to geekactually.com. You'll find it all there. You can get merchandise for us as well. We got t-shirts and all sorts of stuff. It all helps to support the show. Go to cafepress.com.au/geekactually. And we have a couple of friends out there in podcast land. There's The Real Junkies, and I'm going to put out this call one more time because they still haven't put out a new episode. Where are you guys?
Yeah.
Find them at weekendronan.com. Send them an email and say, where's our new episode?
Yeah. Demand
or,
it.
Demand it. Or you can find them on iTunes, REEL Junkies. And of course, Brad and Charlie over at their podcast, Good Day Sir.
Good Day Sir.
Love that name. And you can find them at reboundradio.com. That's it. We don't have an opening clip this week, as I say, because this is kind of a special episode. And I have no idea what music we're going out on. When I edit it, I'm sure I'll find something to go out on. So I'll put it in the show notes, whatever that might be. So I have no idea what I'm going
to do. David Bowie's Changes, just
for something. Yeah.
Something.
Putting out the fire with gasoline.
Ah.
I love that song. That's
there you go.
There you go. What relevance does it have?
How about Heroes? None.
Anything from Ziggy Stardust's catalog.
Oh, yeah. Absolutely. Yeah. No, look, just the whole album.
This podcast will be edited and will go out later in the week, so I'll figure out some closing music and I'll put it in the show notes. So,
the Macarena.
That's for Jane, isn't it?
Aqua's Barbie Girl.
Oh, Barbie Girl. Oh, my God.
Yeah, Barbie Girl.
Yeah, I forgot all about it.
I've sung on your show.
I think I've actually... that's pretty good. Yeah. I actually have that, I think. So
wow, there you go. That's the song. If
I have that, I will put it on. All right, guys, we're going to sign off. You got anything else, Richard? No? Yes?
No, that's it.
No. Yeah. I should mention, because by the time you hear this, it'll be irrelevant. Don't worry about it.
Yeah, I was going to do that, but I didn't think you'd have it edited by the time.
I have something that's going out on the site today, but it's going to be topical and it'll be irrelevant by the time you hear this, so it doesn't matter. Go follow the site. You'll catch up on stuff.
Chances are this time next week, you'll all be watching Star Wars on Blu-ray.
I will be.
Yeah, that's for sure.
Yeah, I've got it pre-ordered. It's coming.
Oh, yeah. I haven't got it pre-ordered, but I'll definitely
I put $50 down on it already. I've already
pre-ordered. Maybe I'll have to do it. I don't think these things are going to sell out. I think they'd suck it into the hole. I've got to order it now.
I just pre-order it because that way they'll at least call me. And I don't have to keep going down there. You know, they'll call me and say your order's here.
They're doing launch parties at 6 a.m.
I'm not doing that.
Which is
mental. I'm not doing
that. You know, these movies came out in 1977.
Yeah, well.
Well, the first one.
77,
80, 83,
99. The other thing we should mention is that there is supposed to be, and this is actually not film actually related, this is Geek actually related, but Geek actually will be back soon, which is that there will be an Apple announcement soon. So keep your eyes on this because there should be a new iPhone.
Because September the announcement and October, November release.
There's been a lot of speculation over the date of the announcement, but I believe it's been locked down. I think it's September 7th or something like that.
That would be today.
No, we've already passed that. No, it's not today.
September 7th.
Yeah, maybe next week. I don't know. Anyway.
That'd be good. So iPhone 5, maybe.
iPhone 5. Hopefully, if nothing else, we'll get the release of iOS 5 for the devices.
Which
and
will kill the iPhone 4 the same way that the...
I don't think it will. I think the iPhone
4... iPhone 4 is a bit more robust.
iPhone 4 will hold up to it. It'll kill 3GS.
Mm.
Forget it. Just don't even bother putting it on the third generation. And we should also be getting some more details about iCloud.
Interesting.
Which I am very curious about. But anyway, that's all geek related, and we will do that on a Geek Actually show. In the meantime, go see more movies. You don't see enough movies, and all of life's questions are answered in the movies. And we'll see you all next week. Hopefully live.
Hopefully.
Bye, everybody.
Bye. I'm a Barbie girl in the Barbie world.